Hello and welcome. The ME Group, ticker symbol MEGP, are vending machine experts, and they install and operate a range of instant service equipment in 16 countries around the world. Photo booths and 24/7 laundry machines are two of their core products. Today, Mark will be talking about why his shareholding in the business has been so successful. So I hope you enjoy this, episode 20 of the Desert Island Investor. This episode of the podcast is generously hosted by Progressive Equity Research. Visit their website at progressive-research.com. Mark, your strategy is one of long-term investment with limited activity. And you've mentioned previously that the ME Group is your largest position in one stock. So what's the history of this holding?
Right. Well, I first purchased ME Group back in January 2017 at £1.74. This was, as usual, a smaller starter position. In 2018, the price had fallen back and I made another small addition at £1.11. By 2021, it'd fallen again and I added a modest sum at 78 pence. Then in 2022, when I felt I had greater conviction, I went big at 71 pence and 76 pence. And when I crunched the numbers, the average buy price is 84 pence.
Okay, well, as usual, can you please share the base numbers?
Well, ME has a market cap of 611.4 million, a PE of 12.3 and a yield of 4.6%. And that's based on the current share price of £1.61.6.
So this is without doubt a success story, as you've nearly doubled your return, not including any dividends.
Yes, Paul, but as I say, I don't become overly despondent about my losing positions, and neither do I become euphoric about the winning ones. I may be winning at present, but I never declare an outright victory. You never know what's around the corner, and any glossing can quickly turn to a humbling embarrassment.
ME Group was, until a couple of years ago, Photo ME. The name change reflects a move towards wider interests. But I expect the photo booths are still the major aspect of the business.
The photo booth was invented by Anatole Josepho in 1925 in New York, and it was called the Photomaton. It's very close to reaching its centenary. You can find an image on the internet of the early design, and broadly speaking, it's not changed very much over that period, and we can readily identify what it is. So when we think about the disruptive technologies that we've seen over the last century, the photo booth has done very well to stand the test of time until relatively recent times, the advent of the iPhone.
Yeah, the digital cameras going to destroy the business model of Kodak very quickly. But I understand that it is now acceptable for passport photographs to be taken using your mobile phone camera now.
Yes, but this is limited to the UK, and we are very much the exception. This development came in 2017, and you may have thought that this would have been the thin end of the wedge. But in the UK market, there's over 3,000 booths from an overall estate of 30,762. So it's still a major market. That number is up 11.4% on the previous year, largely down to an acquisition of 3,548 units in Japan from two Fujifilm subsidiaries. Now, partly what prompted us to cover ME Group at this point was that I've just renewed my passport and in the process used a photo ME, which is situated in our local Sainsbury's. Now, the last time I used one of these was 10 years ago, coincidentally, the last time I needed a fresh passport. And I think I sent you the pictures, Paul, and I don't think I really needed a new one because I don't think I've aged a day. It's like the It's like the picture of Dorian Gray. Nothing's changed.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, not even the jacket I was wearing.
Yeah, but, yeah. As I said, your clothes and I was going to say haircut, but of course that's inappropriate.
Yeah, it's a miracle of evolution. Now, so this cost me £10, and in this instance, the opportunity cost is £10 because if I'd done it on my iPhone, it would have been free of charge. Now, the passport photo criteria are quite stringent, and I was using the machine, and I knew it was compatible and unlikely to be rejected. So for me, £10 every 10 years is worth it to avoid all that faffing around. It's an nth of the passport cost, and it's an nth of my trips abroad where I'll be focusing on the price of the flight and the hotel costs and having a good time. But I think what differed this time, that was besides the printed photos being produced, I was given a code and I could directly upload my photo onto the passport application. So that enabled me to complete it online. We recently bought a new rail card, two together, where Elaine and I uploaded our photos, and we just did those in our living room against a magnolia background, and the photographer was casting a shadow of the other person, but I think for that application it was sufficient. It's been passed. So I would imagine that for Photo Me in the UK, that the lion's share of the business will be passports. Have you used a photo booth lately, Paul? I don't want to give your age away too much, but you were sorting your bus pass, I believe.
Well, yes, I did. I did use a Photo Me machine in a supermarket to obtain my bus pass photo. I confess, I have a criticism that the instructions didn't really make it clear how the digital upload option worked. And that kind of stopped me in my tracks when I'm trying to read the instructions on the side of the machine. And the explanation was there, but it was too wordy. It needs to present something dead simple, like press here to upload your photo to the internet for a passport application and press here to take your photographs away with you. But other than that, you know, it was, you know, it worked. It was expensive, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, you're somebody pretty tech savvy as well, aren't you? It's not as though, but I would imagine if it's something that you're only doing once every 10 years, it really needs to be idiot proof, doesn't it?
Yes, that would be my only criticism. I would imagine if I'd have stayed there and watched other people, I'm pretty certain a lot of people would be standing there staring at it for quite a while before they actually put their money in, unless they have passport photographs taken regularly, which is not going to happen. But although the UK passport office allows selfies as passport photographs, are photo booths still the status quo elsewhere in the world?
Yeah, Photo Me of booths in Australia, Austria, Belgium, China, Finland, France, Germany, Ireland, Italy, Morocco. Interesting, that's part of that. I think that's under the Spanish market. Interesting, so that's a toehold into Africa. The Netherlands, Portugal, Singapore, Spain, Switzerland, and Vietnam. Now, after the UK allowing self-taken images, and they were leading the way, I think there was a bit of a cloud over the company that this could be a contagion that would spread. And it's something that I think was something to monitor. But this is 7 years on and nobody else has followed suit yet. But who knows? The UK might yet revert to the previous practice. So this is the largest part of the business, accounting for 57.9% of the revenue.
Before we turn to the other areas of the business, you tell me that you're actually interested in vending now as an investment theme generally.
Yeah, let's take an example on the Photo Me side. The average revenue per machine across the group was £5,908. That's just £16.19 per day. For this exercise, let's presume that it's £10 across all markets. That means that it takes just £16.20 per day. So down at Sainsbury's, that was me and perhaps one other person, if it was a good day. Now, a machine can just sit there patiently. It's powered down. It's waiting for the next customer to come along. It's not paid a salary. It doesn't pay a pension, national insurance contribution, doesn't receive any holidays, doesn't need cover over its lunch hour, toilet break, training, a Christmas party, Matt leave, Pat leave. Time off to go to the funeral of another photo booth. Reviews, appraisals, yeah. Disciplinary hearings. I suppose it could go off sick, but it doesn't wander off to the water cooler to talk to another vending machine. I think I've adequately made my point. So me group of 1,193 employees, of which 140 are classified as part-time. Now, 650 are service engineers. So a lot of the workforce are boots on the ground servicing the estate. I'm not sure to what extent there is a need for heavy servicing, or if that's a euphemism for reloading the machines and taking the money out. With revenue, group revenue of 297.7 million, that's revenue per employee of £249,539. So if we compare that with the most recent company we covered, Titan Holdings, their revenue was just 111,000, which is less than half.
Now, I'm a big fan of Japanese culture and contemporary music, and I do sometimes take a virtual stroll around Tokyo, thanks to the magic of YouTube. And as you walk through the city, it's clear that the Japanese are vending machine mad, and the streets are lined with machines selling everything from toys, sweets, hot and cold, food, clothes, etc. I've even seen a video of a ferry crossing in Japan where the dining area on the ship was just lined with vending machines, and there were no staff present to serve food at all. Now, you tell me that Japan has the most vending machines per capita in the world.
Yes, Japan is reported to have one vending machine for every 25 or 30 people, and it's partly for some of the reasons we've outlined. Now, we grew up with the backdrop of the population explosion, and this narrative is still going along. Now, I was born back, would you believe, in 1966, and the average births per woman globally was 5.0. Now, the replacement fertility rate is actually 2.1 instead of 2, which you might think, but I'll not go into the reason for that. Now, by 2021, the global fertility rate had dropped from that 5 to 2.3. Now, that's an amazing drop in less than one lifetime, and the trend is continuing. Now this is just an average with a broad difference. In 2023, the fertility rate in Niger was 6.7. And in Taiwan, it's just 1.1. But across all countries, the trend is down. In general, developed economies have lower birth rates, and the remaining growth is almost solely down to sub-Saharan Africa. India and Bangladesh are now below replacement levels. Now, once a country hits the replacement magic number of 2.1, it does take some decades to feed through to a decline, due to this generation not having reached adulthood and started their own families. The reason for this collapse are varied. It's better education, more widespread contraception, more women in the workplace with careers. Women are going into further education and delaying starting a family. There's the widespread distribution of families and grandma and granddad not at hand to help out and alleviate childcare costs, etc., etc. Now, Japan is the canary in the cage. It's at the forefront of the aging population and lower birth rates, and this has led to a population decline. So since 2009, when the population was 128.1 million, it's fallen every year since and is now 122.6 million. If you look at this trend, other economies will follow. Some countries are looking to incentivize birth rates, but with limited success. Now, unlike many other countries, Japan has not wanted to go down the immigration route, as I understand that they're very protective of their Japanese culture and are looking to increasingly invest in robotics, mechanization, and automation. They cannot waste human resources on low-grade tasks. Now, other countries have been looking for a quick fix of taking people from other countries. And this is where I can share a secret with you, Paul. And our audience, that it's a little known fact that immigrants also get old. So this model results in a Ponzi scheme of dragging in more immigrants, or migrants as we call them, and at some stage this is unsustainable. Also, and it's, I'm sure it's a long way off, the availability of migrant workers whose own populations are declining may become less accessible. And I understand if we look at these projections that we're expected to reach peak human by around 2050.
And I believe there's another factor that makes Japan conducive to vending machines.
Yes, one of my investor pals is Alan Grant, and he's worked out in Japan. He's married to a Japanese lady, Reiko, and he spends a lot of time out there. It's a country I've never visited, but he tells me that there are very low levels of vandalism in Japan. So that could be a further beneficial factor. It's very useful having a broader network, and there are all these people are feeding you with information disseminated.
So as you pointed out, vending is hardly new. The photo booth itself has been around for a century, and machines have been dispensing hot drinks and snacks for decades. But as well as for obtaining a product, the vending machine concept is now widely applied in situations where a human interacts with a machine to place an order or to receive a payment.
Yeah, let's look at the ATM. The first one was opened by Barclays in Enfield in 1967, all the way back then. And do you know which celebrity cut the ribbon, Paul?
I do not know.
That icon of the swinging 60s, Reg Varney.
On the buses?
Yeah, oh. Yeah. Offer. Yeah, they don't make comedy like that anymore, or do they, Paul?
No, that's probably not a bad thing, actually.
Yeah. Now, cash is on the decline, but broadly, this is how we access it instead of queuing at a bank and having it counted out. We look at McDonald's and other fast food outlets. They've touch screens where you place your order and then it's brought to you. We have a pharmacy very close to us, Everest Pharmacy, and that's got a dispensing machine. Rail companies, they're looking to close their manned ticket offices. Got car parks at one side, somebody in a booth. It's got an electric arm, and you just take a token out. Even the local library, you just check out your own books. And then at supermarkets, I use that to scan as you shop at Tesco, and I think it's excellent. I want to be in and out like it's a bank raid. You do the shopping and it's, you know, go, go, go. I don't want to necessarily have a chat with somebody at the checkout. And I don't know if you know the Asda petrol station there at Astley Bridge, Paul.
I don't, but I have used other Asda petrol stations that are just, they just pay at pump.
That's right. It did have two kiosks, and you could either pay at the pump or pay at the kiosk. Then it went down to one kiosk, and now it is pay at the pump only. Mm. So these are all going over to the customer interacting with the machine. So if we look at the Mi Group, their machines are slightly more advanced. Instead of just dispensing a can of soft drink, there is some element of processing and adding value.
Right. Let's move on to the rest of the ME estate then, and a lot of store have been placed in their Revolution laundries, which are basically self-service washing machines. Now, given the comparatively low cost of domestic washing machines, I would have thought that leaving the house to do your laundry was a thing of the past, but ME obviously think there's a market there. So what's the story behind that thinking?
Well, Revolution sits on the wash me side, and I understand that 97% of the households in the UK have a washing machine. But that's that 3% of circa 70 million is still a market for somebody, Paul. Now, in Darwin, there's still a traditional laundrette, which is conveniently located just a few minutes' walk for us. And we have used it a few times over these when our machine has broken down and we're waiting for a replacement. Now, on this subject, I go to a cafe at the Walmsley Unitarian Chapel on a Friday. It's very good. And one of the ladies there, who's one of the helpers, she sat beside me just a fortnight ago, and she took a phone call. And she said, it's typical, isn't it? They're just trying to sort something out. She was having a washing machine delivered by AO that day. It was due to be plumbed in. They just delivered it. So she said, oh, that's me this afternoon. I'm off to the laundrette. So of that 97%, there are people like myself, like Hillary, and others, I would imagine, from time to time, have to use a backup. So I would suspect there are a number of occasional customers. Now, you've been stranded out here for some time, and you do our laundry by slapping it against some stones on the waterfall. And on the whole, you do a very good job. Could do with the collars being starched a little bit more. But when was the last time that you used a laundrette, Paul? Was that not you on that Levi 501 Amber?
No, I can't claim that. Nobody bothered about that guy taking his trousers off in a laundrette, but I'm pretty sure if I did that in Bolton, I'd get arrested. I was, however, in a laundrette yesterday, and this wasn't planned as a research trip for the podcast, but my friend does genuinely go to our local laundrette from time to time to wash bedding. And she said I could go along if I wanted the experience. So I did. And she said she finds it easier and less expensive than using her own washing machine at home. And so, I believe I did a little bit of research on this, but an average domestic washer holds around 4.5 kilograms of washing. The laundrette small washer holds 9 kilograms, the medium one 13 kilograms, and the large one 18 kilograms. So the large wash is 6 pounds, and it holds three times the amount of a domestic washer. So that seems, I can imagine, pretty economical. I haven't managed to Google the cost of running a domestic washing machine, but the dryers are very large, and they cost about £1 for 15 minutes, according to the sign on the wall. Although my friend reckons that 10 minutes is more realistic. But I must say the experience was, it was a bit like being in an episode of EastEnders.
Was the equivalent of Doc Gotton there then? Or?
No, it was, it was manned. There was somebody there.
Right.
And, you know, there were lots of interesting signs stuck on the wall. Apparently if you wanted any change, you had to go to a shop, which is about two streets down, to ask for it. They didn't carry any cash. Mm. It all seemed to be working. There were two or three people in there sitting there, you know, swiping through their phones, waiting for their washing to be done. Mm. But back onto the ME Group's solution. Unlike a conventional laundrette, their Revolution machines are not actually housed in a dedicated building, are they? They're in fact al fresco.
Yeah, your typical laundrette is, I would say, unmanned from my experience, but nevertheless, there's a building that requires some upkeep, business rates, heating, lighting, cleaning. Somebody will have to open and close it each day, and then there's peripherals like they've got to have a fire extinguisher. Now, me has some modest exposure to the conventional laundrette model, but the Revolution model requires none of this. It's just a small area of underutilized land, so it's got much lower overheads.
And where are these machines typically located?
We find a lot of them on supermarkets, petrol forecourts, motorway services. They've recently entered a partnership, I understand, with Homebase. And they're even found on pub car parks and village halls. And on that, I've done my own market research, because last week I found myself in the Bolton area, Paul, and I thought I'm going to use one of these. So I said to Elaine, come on. We're going out this afternoon, taking you somewhere. And she said, well, do I need to get dressed up? What do I need to wear? Oh, no, don't bother with anything like that. So I went to an establishment. It was a pub, the Mosley Arms at Brakemet. Do you know it, Paul?
I do.
Good.
I do know it.
Yeah.
I don't go to the Mosley Arms, but I do know where it is.
Yeah. I pronounced that right, Brakemet.
Brakemet, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so that's an area of Bolton. But when I got there, I was disappointed to find out that the machine was no longer there. It's on the Revolution Laundry website, your nearest one. So it wasn't there. It was one of those parcel lockers. And I went into the pub and said, where's the machine? Oh, we had it taken away ages ago. So then I made my way to one on Bury Road on a Nisa, yeah. And we did it there. So it was an interesting process. It was... we did a 9 kilo wash, which cost £5.50. Elaine seemed to think that was, again, quite reasonable. And there's different facilities. So that was a 9 kilo washing machine. There's a 20 kilo washing machine, and they've got a dryer. And it's actually your detergent it's already pulled them. It's ecological hypoallergenic detergent, whatever that is.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that's to stop allergies, isn't it? But there's three different temperatures. Again, it's the first time we've used it, so we weren't totally all fair with the. I think we get it spot on next time, knowing what we're doing. But there's a 15 degree wash, a 40, and a 60, and then you can have add-ons like a pre-wash and a softener and a softener and sanitizer at an extra cost. And then the drying, which we didn't use, goes up in 15 minute intervals, and it's £3.50 for each 15 minutes. But so we put our, you can put your phone number in, but I didn't get it, and it was running for half an hour. That's on the washing machine and it's locked. But you're supposed to get a text, and I think I put the number in right. I didn't get a text to say that it'd come to the end of its cycle. So the machine is actually locked whilst it's spinning on the washing machine, but afterwards it just unlocks then. So I did contact Robert Mortimer at PhotoMe and I told him we were doing this pod, and just to let him know that we'd gone to one of his machines and it was no longer there. So if there's hundreds of people making their way to the Mosley Arms, then don't go to the washing machine. Don't, because it's not there anywhere. The nearest one's at NYSA. So he said he's going to change. He came back straight away and he said, yeah, well, I'll get onto the department, make sure that is taken off. And it is say that, have you ever had occasions of washing being stolen? Because if you're going around the supermarket and it's knocked off, Paul, he seemed to think this was quite funny, but do you think it had ever happened that? If people found out that you left your wire fronts in, or your T-shirts, that somebody might think, that's nice, that I'm going to have that.
I have no idea, but your decision to actually include that in the podcast will no doubt change the pattern of behaviour from anybody who lives anywhere near one of those machines. I think that one that went missing from Braitmouth, you'll probably find that on eBay.
Right, okay. It's twin with the Bronx, I believe, isn't it? But I mean, on the dryers, they're not locked. But I mean, it's so there's just the three. So I would imagine, as I've said, I wouldn't imagine these machines are used over the reg. So I think you would be disappointed if you went to the machine and found that somebody else was already using it and that you'd have to wait. And then equally, I think what could be annoying is that, you know, if I put my machine in, it was a supermarket, I'd gone round to do my big weekly shop and it'd been sat there for half, you know, somebody's turned up, it stopped moving round, and then somebody's like tut-tutting. Would they be sat there patiently, or would they take it out and chuck it on the floor? I don't know. But
Tesla had this problem with their chargers, apparently, at service stations, because people would roll up in their Tesla, plug it in, and I believe with a Tesla you get an app on your phone. So they'd scoot off into the service station to get a coffee and a donut or whatever. And then the app would send them a message to say that the charge was complete and the car was 100% full. But they kind of took their sweet time getting back to the charging machine. And like you say, I mean, I've seen videos of huge queues of Teslas because sometimes the charges don't work. So Tesla, I think they charge you quite a lot of money for every minute over your charge reaching its full point. So if when your car's 100% charged, if you don't get back there, you know, to actually disconnect it and let somebody else charge up, then you get charged per minute. And I think it's quite a lot. The last time I remember, it was about £7 a minute. So that can get very expensive if you decide to linger over your coffee. So maybe Me Group could do the same thing, because it's all taken with card, isn't it? I don't think they do cash, or do they? Does it take cash?
I didn't look for it. I just paid with card. So most things seem to be just with card now, don't they? Mm. But I don't know, Paul. Perhaps I'm looking for problems that aren't there. I'm being nitpicky. It's probably things that don't arise. But it was just, I suppose you do these things, don't you? You try and stress test the concept. But I would imagine they're. I'll probably get a text in a few weeks telling me that the wash has actually been completed.
But, yeah, I would think if it becomes much more popular, then they will probably do something to make sure that you don't leave it unattended. You know, don't just leave it and don't bother to go back to get your undies out.
Yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise, like you say, it's a bit like. Well, I went on holiday many years ago, and we. Because of my friend became ill, we left our towels on the sunbeds and disappeared for the afternoon, only because we had to go to the doctor. But when we came back to retrieve them, they'd been thrown unceremoniously into the pool.
Yeah. So people had obviously become quite disgusted the fact that we'd reserved those sunbeds and then left them for hours without sitting on them.
It's one of those things. It's sunbed etiquette. Yeah. There's a full podcast we could do on that, isn't there?
Anyway, so these, I mean, I would imagine that these are very popular with people who are working away from home and don't have the facilities to do their washing in a hotel, for example.
Yeah, there'll be contractors, and I've seen their machines at motorway services. I think there's one at Stafford. And perhaps heavy goods drivers who are resting overnight use them, or tourists from overseas and backpackers. They'll need some form of laundry, surely. Now, when we were in Chile, we used a coin-operated washing machine within the hotel.
So what's in it for the respective partner that agrees to host the laundry machines on their site?
Well, me pay the site owner a percentage of the takings or a set fee, but the real attraction is dwell time. Now, imagine if you've nipped down to the petrol station and put your wash load in, Paul. So do you wait and just sit in your car, bored to tears, or do you fill the car, check the tyres, visit that ATM or mooch around the shop and buy a coffee at the franchise Greggs or Starbucks? It's a sprat to catch a mackerel.
So how many Revolution laundry sites are there in the UK?
Well, there are 5,533 machines in operation. Now, that was up 16.4% on the previous year. Now, they've added 65 per month, and they're looking to ramp this up to 80 to 90 per month this year. Now, if you remember that the Photo.me revenue per machine was £5,908, with Revolution, this is 14,793, and this is up on the previous year from 12,816. So this is a significantly higher revenue, but we're comparing apples with oranges, really. They're different types of machine. They're manufactured different, and they've got different ongoing costs. A Photo.me booth is a low-energy machine is probably working for a couple of minutes a day. The Revolution will need significantly longer time, and it's more energy intensive. With more moving parts, you'll experience more attrition. Interestingly, the group has entered a period of refurbishment and maintenance, and this is the first since they were launched in 2012. So considering that they sit outdoors in all weathers and that attrition that they undergo, it suggests to me that they're very durable machines. Now, also on the energy front, they have photovoltaic solar panels, some of them are being installed into them. And they advise that can make an energy saving of between 10 and 30%.
I was surprised to find out that despite those four photographs from the Photo.me booth costing 10 quid, which seems quite a lot, the Revolution laundry side actually has the better margins.
Yes, me use EBITDA, which, as we've discussed before, can obfuscate the facts. On the Photo.me side, EBITDA to revenue is 35.8%, and on Revolution, this is 48.4%. So Revolution may refer to the rotation of the washing machine drum, or the revolution within me itself, me the company. I've not heard of anybody else having a similar offering.
So if Photo.me is 57.9% of the revenue and the laundry is a further 27.4%, that's only 85.3%. So where does the residue come from?
There's a Print.me, which consists of high-quality printing kiosks. Now, I've never seen one of these. The revenue per machine is just £2,374, and this is 3.8% of the total revenue. And in the report, they've grouped a number of sundries together. Amuse Me, which are kiddies' rides. They are mostly in the UK and the Netherlands. And Copy Me, which are photocopiers, and they're mostly in France, and this is 6.5%. And lastly, there is the Feed Me, which is a different business model, and this is for sales and service of self-service fresh fruit, juice, and of pizza vending machines, one healthy and one perhaps not so.
So the Feed Me model is moving away from the Me group actually owning the machine and operating it at a partner's site to manufacturing and selling the machines to retailers. And you tell me that they have ambitions to become the market leader in that particular field.
They purchased Semper on the juice side in 2019 for 20.64 million euros. Now, this had profit before tax of 3.7 million euros on revenue of approximately 10 million. And in 2019, they purchased Rest O' Clock for 3.1 million pounds. And this is pizza machines, and they offer a 24/7 machine that makes a pizza in just 4 minutes. I'm not sure what the quality of these are. If anybody's tried one, you know, please let us know. Pizza is a very good fast food product in that it can readily provide a vegetarian offer, for which there's increased demand. Now, when me bought this pizza vending machine business, it was something of a cottage industry, just making 40 per year. And the ambition was to ratchet this up to some 100 a month by the end of 2023. Now, this is some leverage at 30 times. Now, sometimes the best laid plans go awry, and acquisitions, despite due diligence, can backfire spectacularly. They refer in the report to that ambiguous term, technical issues that have slowed progress, resulting in an impairment of goodwill and intangibles of 2.6 million. And they're going to relaunch the division and have brought the manufacturing in-house in the interest of cost efficiencies and having the R&D team at hand. At the end of the financial year, production was at 30 per month, well below that self-imposed target of 100. But it may seem disappointing, but let's remember that this was a modest acquisition. And to be fair to me, they can't be accused of setting the bar low. Their goals were very ambitious. And even at 30 a month, that's 360 a year. That's sometimes more than they inherited. And also, they've not taken too long to take affirmative action. If something's not working, then try something else. If you remember back to the Titan South Korea that we mentioned in the last podcast, with where the ventilation market had changed, they'd identified this 5 years ago, but done nothing of note.
Now, you like cash, and a good number of your stocks have net cash, and this is the case with ME2.
Yeah, ME's model is very cash generative. They've got net cash of 33.9 million. So with a market cap of 611, you're buying around 5% cash. Very rarely do payment and provision of product or service occur in unison, and one precedes the other at varying lengths of time. Now, you had your own marketing business, Paul, and had to supply work up front and then wait patiently for your customers to deign to pay you, or perhaps not. But with the photo booth, the washing machine, or even the kiddies' ride, it does nothing until you've put the money in. So this helps pay the dividend, and there was a special dividend last year, and there's also been a share buyback.
Okay, on a topical point, you also like to see that the directors of the businesses that you invest in are holding shares. And Serge Krasniansky,
good effort,
the
yeah.
CEO of ME Group, has 36.6%.
Yeah, that certainly concentrates the mind, Paul. Now, Serge is paid in salaries, fees, benefits, bonus, LTIs and pension. It all comes together to £2,279,545. Now, that's a tidy sum. Wow. But he owns 137 million and something shares, 137,803,041 shares. So during the year, a dividend was paid of 7.39 pence. We all received that dividend. So Serge drew in dividends. So he's got 2.25 million in all his package of 10,183,000 and something else. And last year, which included a special dividend, including all the dividends rolled in together, his take was about 17 million. So as handsome as that remuneration may be, it's the income from the dividends that's the greatest source of income, and they can only come from a profitable business.
I would expect that having 36.6% also gives you significant control over the business.
Yeah, we're never happy, are we? We want directors to hold a lot of stock, but worry that there's no effective counterbalance. Certainly, they give significant sway with that block vote, as it would be difficult to mobilise the remaining 63.4%, even if they were of a like mind, should a possible issue arise.
Now, Serge is the CEO and deputy chair, but he's 81, so I would expect succession is on the agenda.
Well, besides Serge, the only current executive director is Tanya Krasniansky, who conveniently is Serge's daughter. So Tanya is from a legal background. She joined the group in 2020 and the board in 2021. So the company quickly saw the promise that she had and promoted her. And if I was a gambling man, I would suggest that she's in pole position, especially with that ponderous family shareholding. As a shareholder, I just hope that she's got the necessary skill set.
And ME, or I'll call him ME, has also returned to the FTSE 250 index.
This is important, as this categorization attracts more money. As we've discussed before, Paul, with trackers, they have a parameter to buy a certain index. So all these 250 trackers are forced to buy ME Group stock, be it good, bad, or indifferent. Now, the more money being invested by the passive route, this is having a greater effect. And I would suggest that with an index like the 250, it's going to be more difficult to break in or to be dumped out of it. It's going to be less easy just by the sheer weight of money.
So all in all, given the picture you've just painted, this has been a recent winner that you have called right. Would you agree?
Yes, yeah, very, very pleasing. The valuation doesn't look particularly stretched, but as it's my largest holding at around 12% of the portfolio, I think it would be prudent to flesh out some other positions first. If it was lower in the portfolio, then I may well have considered adding. That aside, I would like them to make some more progress and find broader vending offers that would dilute their exposure to, should, you know, markets change in the short term.
Okay, Mark. Thank you very much indeed for that review of ME Group. Well, that's all for this episode. We hope that you enjoyed it. Please remember the content is for information only and it is not financial advice. If you have a question for Mark for our Question in a Bottle podcast, just complete the form on our website, thedesertislandinvestor.co.uk. Thanks again for listening. See you next time.